Middle East and Africa.
Gaza. Assuming responsibility. The question of how much aid is getting into Gaza and who is liable for it is increasingly fraught.
An estimated 1 million Palestinians have fled Rafah since the start of Israel's offensive there on May 6th. For those who remain, the fighting has had grisly consequences. At least 45 people, including a number of children, died on May 26th after an Israeli airstrike set fire to a tent camp. Survivors had to pull charred bodies from the wreckage. Even those who evacuated are not entirely safe. Dozens more were killed 2 days later in a strike near Al-Mawasi, a so-called humanitarian zone for displaced civilians. Less macabre, but just as consequential, is what the offensive has done to the flows of aid that have kept 2.2 million Palestinians alive throughout 8 months of war. Consider the statistics from one recent day. The Israeli army said that 370 lorries of aid reached Gaza on May 27th, 154 of them via Kerem Shalom, a border crossing in the south. Yet the UN's official tally from that day recorded zero lorries at Kerem Shalom. Neither side is lying, nor though are they telling the whole truth. The confusing figures show how Israel's campaign in Rafah has complicated deliveries of aid. Until it began, most of the aid reaching Gaza did so by lorry in the south, where it was collected by the UN. Of the 27,608 lorries that entered between the start of the war and May 6th, around 25,000 went via the Rafah and Kerem Shalom crossings. Over 90% of those lorries delivered goods to the UN and other charities. Only a small fraction carried cargo ordered by private firms. Deliveries reached an all-time high in April when 5,671 lorries entered Gaza via the two southern crossings. There were also new routes for shipments to other parts of the enclave. In May, Israel opened a new crossing called West Erez, which could handle deliveries in the north. America inaugurated a temporary pier to receive supplies by sea. After months of shortages, aid workers were hopeful that the humanitarian situation was improving. Then Israeli troops began their push into Rafah. This has caused two big problems. First is the supply of aid. Egypt stopped sending lorries to the Rafah crossing after Israeli troops seized it. Kerem Shalom has at times been too dangerous to use, partly because Hamas keeps firing rockets at it. The week before the Rafah offensive began, the UN received 1,601 lorries through those crossings. The week after, it recorded 63. Most lorries entering in the south are now bound for private firms, not charities. They show up in Israel's statistics, but not in the UN's. On most days, the West Erez crossing now handles a majority of the aid entering Gaza. In the 2 weeks before the Rafah offensive, just 94 aid lorries used that route. In the 2 weeks after it began, 465 of them did. That is a fivefold increase, but it does not make up for the much larger drop in aid flows in the south. Nor does the maritime route. In its first week, the American-built pier received around 1,100 tons of aid, the equivalent of 8 lorries a day. On May 28th, the Pentagon said the pier had been damaged and needed to be towed to Israel for repairs. Moreover, both the pier and the West Erez crossing are in northern Gaza, which has been largely depopulated. That points to a second issue. The daily figures from the Israeli army count all the lorries that clear security screening and unload their goods on the Gazan side of the border. But those deliveries are little help to Gazans unless someone can pick up the supplies and deliver them where they're needed. Until May 6th, The UN was largely responsible for that. It sent hundreds of lorries each day to collect aid from the southern crossings. With most of Gaza's 2.2 million people huddled in Rafah, most aid stayed there as well. Many UN lorries had to drive only a few kilometres to drop their cargo at warehouses and government offices. Now, though, the UN says it is often too dangerous to send drivers to Kerem Shalom. Since May 6th, it has dispatched just 169 lorries, an average of 7 a day. On May 21st, the UN halted food distribution in Rafah, citing logistical glitches. Deliveries in the north can be fraught as well. Much of the aid that came via the American-built pier was seized by hungry crowds before it reached UN warehouses. Private firms have fewer qualms about security. They send dozens of lorries to Kerem Shalom each day to collect goods and deliver them to makeshift markets. With less aid entering Gaza, these markets are now a vital lifeline, but shoppers say the prices are often high and erratic. This makes for a bleak picture. Food, medicine, and other essentials are still getting into Gaza, but some shipments are stuck in staging areas on the border. Others are sold at prices that few Gazans can afford. Israel, though, insists that it is meeting its duties under international law. Warring states have no duty to feed the enemy, only a duty to facilitate. They must allow neutral parties to deliver humanitarian aid, which Israel has done with the UN. But those duties change if they become occupying powers. Then they must ensure the provision of basic supplies. It is not enough passively to allow food into the territory. Occupiers must themselves actively provide supplies if they're needed and cannot get through by other means. Under international law, an army becomes an occupying power once it can exercise effective control over a territory. The meaning of that phrase is debated. Many Israeli lawyers argue their country cannot be deemed to occupy Gaza. It has not set up a formal administration there, and its troops have withdrawn from many areas they once controlled. Perhaps Israel has been the occupying power for limited periods, in particular areas, they concede, but not in Gaza as a whole. Yet Israel now controls all of Gaza's land borders, its coastline, and its airspace. It has thousands of troops in Rafah, a smaller number deployed along a corridor that bisects the enclave, and the freedom to send forces anywhere it wishes. It has not set up a military government for Gaza, but it has the power to do so. To many, that looks like effective control. David Cameron, Britain's Foreign Secretary, called Israel an occupying power in March. On May 20th, a panel of experts convened by the prosecutor of the International Criminal Court found that Israel was certainly an occupying power in all of, or at least in substantial parts, of Gaza. The prosecutor accused Israel's prime minister and its defense minister of inflicting starvation as a method of war in his request for arrest warrants in May. For almost 8 months, Israel has resisted calls to deliver aid to Gazans directly and urged the UN to do more. But the fighting in Rafah has left the UN paralyzed. Whatever the legal arguments, if the offensive leads to greater hunger and disease in Gaza, many will hold Israel responsible.